is Alonzo Bowden. I want to welcome you to the new year, 2022, and to episode 340 of my podcast, Who's Paying Attention? Now, right off the bat, we want to give a big shout out to our sponsor, BetterHelp.com. BetterHelp supports your mental health goals every step of the way, and my listeners will get 10% off your first month by visiting our sponsor, BetterHelp.com/Alonzo. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Alonzo. 10% off your first month. Mental health is important. Going into 2022, it is going to be very important. Right now, without further ado, I want to introduce my guest. This brother is absolutely hilarious. We must go back over 20 years. We go back to open mic days, to when we were working in the back of coffee shops outside of Hollywood, dreaming of one day walking into a comedy club.
Absolutely. And people need to understand, you know, I came to L.A. twice, and I think I've known you since the first, because I came to L.A. in 97. People don't notice, I was going to USC.
Right.
And I was going to grad school.
Wait a minute, let me finish your intro.
I'm sorry.
Ladies and gentlemen, comedian, filmmaker, international traveler from Brooklyn, because he still mentions Brooklyn everywhere he goes, just to make sure that Brooklyn's in the house. Dwayne Perkins is
yes.
Here.
It's. I'm sorry to cut you off too. Great to see you, though, man. And you know, that Brooklyn thing is weird because people still. I've lived in L.A. over 20 years,
yeah.
Right? And because I'm such a Brooklyn, people still don't know where I live.
Right. They said, "Well, you're here from Brooklyn."
Right.
But here's the thing: you grew up in the old Brooklyn.
Oh, absolutely.
Brooklyn
I have a joke where I say, because I have a joke about I went white water rafting in New Zealand and almost died. And I just talk about how I grew up in Brooklyn and, you know, not like gunsy, you know, stabby shooting.
Right.
Not vegan cupcake Brooklyn. That's not the Brooklyn. I grew up in the drugs. And I still think the 70s were worse. But 80s and 90s weren't a walk in the park.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in St. Albans in Queens.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
In New York, yeah, I'd say the 70s were the bottom for New York. I mean, the 80s were bad. Crack hit. I think the crack thing was worse here in L.A.
I think you might be right.
Than in New York, because L.A. had the gang violence on top of it.
Right,
so, you know,
right.
We had so many shootings. And then the 90s was kind of, things were bouncing back and, you know. But, New York in the 70s. Like, I have a friend who grew up in the South Bronx, and, you know, we tell his kids, like, his kids are growing up. We're like, your dad grew up in the worst neighborhood on earth.
Right.
Like,
absolutely.
They did movies about how bad the South Bronx was. But, anyway, forget all that, man. We're here now.
Yes, we are.
So, to my listeners, I joke about it, but Dwayne works internationally. Like, I do maybe one trip a year. I go overseas, but you got into that vibe. You have worked, you've done comedy all over the world. What is that? How did you get into doing it? How did you, like, leave the U.S. and start working, you know, Hong Kong, Asia, Europe, like you said, New Zealand.
Right.
All Dubai, all over the world. How did you get into that? As opposed to, you know, well, this week I'm going to be in Des Moines,
next week
I'm going to be in Richmond.
Right.
You know, it's like, where you heading? Vietnam? What?
Right. You know, it's weird. It's like the world is big and the world is small. And comedy is small, right? Like, so many different comics know each other. We were just talking off air about some comics we mutually know. So I think there's that. Once it starts, there's an inertia. It's like a snowball going down a hill, because you meet this one, you meet that one, this one connects you to that one. And it's regional, and so, like, if you perform one place in Asia, then it's so easy to perform the other places, because they start calling each other. And obviously, your comedy is your calling card, but then so much of that is offstage stuff, too. Are you a good hang?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, you gotta, people gotta deal with you.
Yeah, people don't really, like I've had places where I didn't do well, and not internationally, more here, but I've had places where I know, like, it was an okay weekend, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I didn't, nothing, you know what I mean? I survived, no one got hurt, and the guy's paying me, and I'm, like, feeling like, oh, I mean, I'm going to take this money clearly, but I feel, you know. And sometimes the guy's like, but I want to have you back. And yeah. I know it's not because that weekend I crushed it, you know what I mean? But a lot of it, too, is that with my credits, and we've talked about this, too, like, we're both, you know, we're known in this game. You're probably more known. You've done your thing. And your respect level among comics, if I may, I think, is so, it's like in the stratosphere.
Yeah.
And you do well, I'm sure. You know what I mean?
You also, yeah.
Yeah. But it's one of those things where, because when the game in America became a fame game, because there was a point where you could just be a solid, good comic. Everyone knew you were good. You didn't have to be this massive draw. Because the clubs took it upon themselves to do a little promoting.
Right.
And then it switched, right? And at that point, when it switched, all my credits didn't necessarily move the needle in America. But overseas, they did.
Yeah.
You know, like I get an email from someone, I send this booker a Conan link, and you're booked.
Yeah.
Well, because it still means something over
there. Right. There's a recognition to it. Now, getting into that, so when you go overseas, you're dealing with expats
and
people who understand English well enough to understand the humor. But talk about what it's like to be a black comic and the expectations overseas, because they look at us differently other countries. So talk about that.
It's kind of all over the place, and it's very similar to the U.S. in the sense that they either come into it with very little expectations, or they come into it with whatever set of movies and TV shows they've watched. You know what I mean? And I think I do a good job of whatever their perception of a black person is. I give them enough of that so they don't feel bamboozled. You know what I mean? And then I just do me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's what I found, and it was actually a relief a lot of times traveling overseas. The racism drops, and it's a fascination because when we go overseas, and tell me if you've had this experience. I've definitely had this experience. In a lot of countries, they appreciate black Americans because they're like, man, you guys do the music. You guys do the sport. Like, you guys do everything we love. Like, we're the ones.
Absolutely.
Our big export is culture, and it's our culture.
Yeah. And, you know, I have a joke about that where I go, they don't like Americans everywhere you go, but they don't seem to mind black Americans quite as much because they know it wasn't us. Like, whoever came here and did whatever they did, it wasn't us.
Right.
Even if we came, we didn't make that call. You know, we didn't make that call. So,
but that really is true, though. They know that we have very limited power in this country.
Right.
And they're like, yeah, well, you guys didn't, you know, it wasn't your idea.
Right.
You know?
And what's crazy about it, too, is that the weird phenomenon is anywhere you go in this world, you're going to see Chinese people. And you're going to see Africans, and you're going to see you're going to hear people speaking Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these are the people who are going to be here when everyone else is not here. The people I just named, right? And when you go places, like, you can go to Malaysia. There's a lot of black people there. Not a lot, but enough, right? And they're Muslims or they're Africans. And that's kind of cool. But so many of them will pretend to be Americans. That's a phenomenon that happens, especially when they're younger. And it's just a weird thing. Because they have their own little lane in these countries, and you know it's not they maybe also have limited power, but it's like they seem to move a little more comfortably than even we can move a lot of places here.
Right.
But there's something about the black American culture that is just so powerful that people you almost want to tell them maybe you're not seeing the whole picture. Like, don't, like, be African. That's good. You know what I mean?
but no, they do see the positive of it, right? And I can understand what you're saying. I can understand why they would want to pretend to be black Americans, because that's the coolest thing
they see.
And that's no disrespect to African culture or anywhere else, because I've been right before the pandemic, I did Cape Town. I did South Africa
Comedy
Festival. So that was my first time being there, and it was phenomenal. But yeah, their love of American culture and then sports.
Right.
You know, people people don't understand like how big, especially the NBA. The NBA has grown to a worldwide league. You know, like everyone knows who LeBron is.
Absolutely. And it's weird because it's like, wow, sports are so big worldwide, they're also not big in a sense. You know what I mean? Like meaning the UK, there's no college.
Yeah, they have their own
football.
Sports.
Right. Like they have but it's at a pro level. Even if you're gonna play soccer, you're either in the Premier League, you're in the Championship League, you're in the league below that. You're not in college playing soccer.
Mm-hmm.
So like we've monetized it and we have this whole system that like other countries they discover it, they tap into it, they don't have it. Like Australia, they love their sports, but it's not as big as here. You know?
Yeah, or you have sports that we don't know.
Yeah, you have that.
You have a cricket star,
right,
and we're like, what? You know,
right.
And I'm a gearhead. I like racing, and you'll have racing stars that are huge, like worldwide.
Yeah.
You know, Lewis Hamilton is a superstar worldwide.
Absolutely.
But here, he could like go to the store, and people like, who's that brother? You know,
that's so crazy, and that's what we have, and I like Australia. Like, I look at Australia like it's the U.S. South. It's like it's so similar because it's an island. We're not an island exactly, but we have an ocean on either side, and that kind of isolates you at least until technology really becomes what it has become. And yeah, Australia is like they've just got their own thing. They've got like Australian rules football, and it's sort of similar to us, except they only have 25 million people. But it's just sort of like that whole. But the one thing about us is though we've exported culture, and since we've set up military bases everywhere, so we've kind of traveled a bit.
Yeah.
But there's a duality of isolationism and being everywhere at the same time. It's kind of weird as Americans.
Have you traveled during the pandemic? You've been overseas.
Yeah, I mean, not in 2020, but yeah, I've started again. I was in Dubai a few months ago. What's it like?
What's the world like, and what is the world's impression of the United States?
You know, the crazy thing is, I think they just scratch their head. I just don't think they get it. Like, they don't. The two things they don't get.
To be honest, we don't get it.
We don't get it, right? They don't get the reaction to the pandemic, the divisiveness politically, even though every country has some sort of political divide, they don't get school shootings. They just don't understand that at all. They don't understand the guns. And I think they don't understand the whole mask thing, and which I don't understand. Like, when I was going to Dubai, it was like, you have to take a test 3 days before you fly. And then that was it. I took the test. Here's my negative test. They didn't ask about my vaccination.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a negative test. So we're still going to wear a mask on the whole plane ride, this 14-hour plane ride. But we feel good, maybe 16-hour, but we feel good that you were negative 3 days ago.
Right. So and you're probably still negative.
And you're still going to wear a mask. And then when you leave, you're going to take another test. And then like in between, people wore their masks, but it just felt like, I don't know, it just felt like it wasn't a thing. Like it was like everyone had their mask on. If someone says, put your mask on, they put it on. At the shows, people did not have their mask on. But also, I think there's more negative testing. I just don't know how it ever gets to a point where you put your flag down and, you know, you die on this hill or that hill. It's really odd, but also I think we, you know, that movie Don't Look Up is such a great movie. I don't know if you've seen it. But, yeah, we're just at a point where, you know, we maybe have just run our course.
Well, yeah, sometimes you wonder that. And you know, it's funny you said, you use the phrase die on that hill, because people are literally dying on that hill. Like, that's why I call it a cult, because they're willing to die for the cult. And the funny thing is, all the leaders of the cult, they're vaccinated. They're good.
Right.
But the members of the cult, you know, we just had another one this weekend, this woman in Orange County, 46 years old, assistant DA. She died of COVID because she's a total anti-vaxxer and this and that. And you're just like, okay, this is my thing that I've reached now with anti-vaxxers. And I don't get into the argument with them, but I'm like, what's your end game? Do you want would you be happy if no one was vaccinated? Like, is that what you want? I don't understand how that would make sense.
And it gets to be a point where, and this is the thing, since September, okay? I've been to Florida twice. I've been to Dallas. And I've been to, Key West, Florida is one of the places. And these places are heavy, heavy Trump. Mm-hmm. Like, I think in Texas, they didn't even homeschool. The kids just went to school, right. You know. And it's one of these things where you're in their presence. They're good people. It's, you know, it feels cool. But then you know you can't even go there because then it's going to be a thing, right?
Right.
And I just don't – my thing is, okay, even if you're right about some of the things, let's sit down. You know what I mean? Like I do think testing is more important than vaccination because people who are vaccinated do get it. But being right about one little aspect of something – doesn't negate the whole science of it. And that's the thing I want to get to this point where it's like, I'm willing to say you were right about XYZ.
Yeah.
If you stop acting like this whole thing is a scam, let's meet somewhere in the middle.
Well, even that though, even what you said about testing versus vaccine, like now that it's like, okay, so now you're okay with testing because in 2020 you didn't want any testing.
Right.
And it really is, to me, this is the part why I don't engage because it's that childish tantrum of I'm going to say no to whatever you say, even though, you know,
And you know what's interesting about that is the Brooklyn in me, you're a Queens dude, I don't talk to people who are not arguing or debating in good faith.
Right.
So the second I think, I know I shouldn't use the word crazy, but I do think in a past life, maybe I had mental issues. Because the second someone tries to create cognitive dissonance in me, the second they say something that doesn't match what they're doing, or I could just tell they're just talking the talk, then at that moment, we only have two options. We have to stop talking or we have to fight.
Yeah.
Physically fight. Like, those are the two options. You know what I mean? So I do understand where you're coming from. It's the weirdest thing. And in Key West, I didn't know what Key West was. I've never been there. But it's basically Bahamas. It's like you're in the Bahamas, except
you're in the U.S. I know Key West.
With a bunch of Trumpers, you know?
To the people listening, Key West is one main street full of bars and restaurants. It's all about tourism. Then there's little side streets with other places. There's cruise ships coming in. Yeah. There's people coming to hang out. And the locals are kind of hippies who got stuck there somehow.
That's exactly right. And it's a big Trump kind of vibe there to the point where, like, there's, and it's like every shop has let's go Brandon shirts or fuck Joe Biden shirts and this and Trump and it's like it's just the weirdest thing because it's like all this political stuff when you guys are just here to day drink, right? So can you just day drink? We don't need these shops like you can't even like take a break to enjoy your day drinking.
Right. That's the thing. They have to be mad at all times. You're always on guard. So one more thing I want to ask you about the international stuff. Then I want to get to Black Ice.
But, yes.
This whole cancel culture thing, do you deal with it? Do you hear about it? Do they ask about it? What's the vibe on that internationally?
Yeah, I think they don't understand it. Because I think internationally, you know, there's certain things that you can still say. Certain jokes you can still make. They're just not as quote unquote woke, and I think they don't understand it. But I don't also think they don't pay attention to it. I don't think internationally, because I think like if you have Twitter, say this international thing, it's Twitter is what it is. How you use Twitter really determines what Twitter is to you. You know what I mean? And I happen to have too many comic friends on there who are woke, so I just can't even look at Twitter because but if I'm just thinking about talking to you mm-hmm. if I went through and I just unfollowed the right 12 people, my whole timeline would be more pleasant. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I think they don't engage. I think they still make their jokes, you know. And like, I'm gonna cut you off, but I was just in Dubai and it's like, you know, it's weird because it's an advanced Muslim city, right? So it's like westernized to a point, but there's still some of the Muslim rules are in effect, and women there feel like it's the safest city they've ever been to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this weird thing where you don't have the freedom. There are cameras everywhere. There's limits to what you can do. You can't joke about the government, this, that, and the third. But women can walk the street at 2 a.m. Yeah. and feel safe, and they can't do that in any city in America.
Right. That is something. You know, that even as crazy as Iraq was,
yeah.
people, Iraqis said, well, when Saddam was here, they were like, we all had free health care. You know, like it's like, wow. It's, you know, one of the things I found as an American going abroad and why I wish Americans traveled more is there are things that work in other countries.
Right.
Like this whole America first, we're the only, it's like, you know, there's other countries, and it's funny, you talk about Dubai. When you talk about the Middle East, it's like, yeah, they kind of been doing it for thousands of years. Like, we're a baby country.
Exactly.
Like, they, so some of their ways, like, we're not crazy about, but other things that they do, like, hey, it works. So, you know, respect that.
Right.
And we have, I think we as a nation have a hard time respecting that, the fact that other countries have cultures and the way they've been doing things. And again, for thousands of years.
Right, exactly, you know, exactly.
A friend was talking about the movie Belfast, you know, and the Protestants and Catholics in Ireland. And he was like, they look exactly the same, but they hate each other. And like, yeah, because he's so used to
right.
the United States where you hate someone who looks different.
Right.
It's kind of like, wow, how did you know? How do you know who to hate over there? And that fight's been going on.
Absolutely. You know? I did a show. I was in Edinburgh and I had a show at the Stand. Shout out to the Stand. I haven't been back in a while, but great comedy club. And this kid comes out after and he's talking to me. And it's like, it's so far north that it's like 10 at night, but
yeah.
the sun is still out, mm-hmm. right? And he's like, yeah. He's the whitest dude I've, like translucent almost,
yeah, that's
right?
what I used to say.
And he's like, he's talking to me. He was at the show, and he's like, yeah, you know, I'm from a mixed marriage. And I was like, whoa. I was like, there's some high yellow situation happening here. And then he just meant his father was Catholic and his mother was Protestant.
Yeah.
Called it a mixed marriage.
Absolutely.
Like, that's deep, you know?
Yeah, it's that real. So, okay. So, thank you.
Yes.
But talking about that now, Black Ice, it is a hilarious short film. Set it up. Tell people what it is, and then we'll talk about it, because I loved it when I saw it.
Oh, thank you so much, man. And shout out to the homies that came through. Tone Bell, Baron Vaughn. You know, it basically what it is Greg. I'm forgetting his last name right now. What it is I was in Canada, talk about world travel. I was in Canada and doing a festival. It's the Kitchener-Waterloo Festival. It's like maybe an hour outside of Toronto. This is maybe 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. And they took all the comics. They took us curling mm-hmm. as a little event. And so two takeaways. One, curling is actually way harder than it looks.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, everything is, right? But curling is, it's like... It's strenuous. It's mm-hmm. way harder than it looks, but it was fun. And then in that moment, it clicked in my brain because I've felt this way for the last 10 years. Like, I support every Black first movie, but then at the same time, I'm like, okay, like, can we just, you know what I mean? Like, at some point, maybe not because this country is what it is, but at some point you're scraping the bottom of the Black first barrel, right? And I'm a Black dude, the Black first swimming team. Okay, cool. I'm here for that. I'm here for this. So I had the thought of the thought in my mind was they've done every other Black first movie. So the only thing left to do is a movie about the first Black curling team. And so how I wrote it and with Brent Bishop, I wrote it and, you know, we ended up writing it together. It's basically a trailer for that movie
mm-hmm.
of the first Black curling team. So basically it's like Cool Runnings on ice, you know? It started as just a trailer. We actually hope to make it an actual movie. But it would be in the vein of the Wayans movies, where it's sort of like it's spoofing and paying homage to all the other Black first movies.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean?
Well, and people can see it. I saw it on your website.
Yeah, yeah. People can see it. I think Brent Bishop has it up. He's the director on blackice.com. But if you type in Black Ice or go to my website, you can see it. Yes.
So to the listeners, we've seen curling. You've seen it on the Olympics. And, you know, I first saw curling, me and my brother. This is way back in, I don't know, 80, 81, right, when ESPN first started.
Oh, wow.
And ESPN had to fill 24 hours.
Right.
So late at night, they would show these weird sports. And one of the things they showed was curling. And we were like, what the hell are they doing? Like, we were laughing our ass off. But in Canada, curling is kind of like bowling. It's like, right, it's a sport that's an excuse to go drink.
Exactly. And it's weird that it's so cold in Canada, and then they do stuff on ice.
On ice.
It's to me, it's like, once I come from outside, I'm not going to go get on ice. You know what I mean? But, you know, more power to them. And the thing is, so the joke of it is that this washed up curling coach is in America.
Yeah.
He's disgraced. He's washed up. He blew his chance as a curler and as a coach. And he just lives in America now, and he gets drunk every day. And he walks outside of a bar, and he sees this black guy rolling dice. But the way the black, and it's Baron Von, and the way he rolls the dice, it's very reminiscent of a curl throw. Like he rolls it, and then
the same technique.
Yeah, and then he goes like, this kid's got it.
Oh, it's hilarious. And the other thing, it's one of those moments where it's like, because I've been going to Canada for 20-something years. I love Canada.
Yeah.
We're supposed to go back this summer.
Oh, you nice.
Know, fingers crossed.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
The festival's happening and all that. But it was like, man, I never thought of that. But yeah, there ain't no black people curling.
Right, exactly. And
loved it.
You know, we actually have written a movie that, you know, hasn't been made yet. And in the movie, you know, so it's weird because the movie, it's like this would, if we make this movie, it would be the first time I think that the trailer was made first and then the movie.
Yeah.
You know, but in the movie we have a character who's a black guy from Canada who back in the day tried to curl and they didn't let him. You know what I mean? So basically it's like these young guys are getting redemption for him. And then the coach, Jerry, he's like, you know, he's able
come on,
to get
man,
back
don't
in.
Ruin it for us.
Sorry,
don't know. You can't believe it. We don't need to know how it turns out.
And by the way, Black Ice is the name that I think Brent Bishop came up with, the director. And I love that name. It's a great name.
Yeah.
But the first name, I named the coach Jerry. So it was called Jerry's Curlers.
See, that's very Wayans. That's, you got Aaron laughing in the back in engineering.
Right.
He's laughing at that one. Hey, let me talk to my people for a minute. Is there something preventing you from hitting your goals? Are you in your own way? Are things interfering with your happiness? Look, right now we're dealing with Omicron. We're dealing with, for some people, tough economy. You can't work because of COVID, this, that, the other. Check out BetterHelp.com. Okay, BetterHelp.com is about taking care of your mental health. And this is definitely something we've learned in the last 2 years. We're talking about sports. During the last Olympics, when Olympic athletes said, hey, I need a mental break, okay, it's real. Mental health is real. BetterHelp.com will assess your needs, match you with your own licensed professional therapist, okay? You can talk in a safe, private, online environment. You can start communicating in 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is secure online professional counseling, okay? You can do it online. You can set up, schedule face-to-face meetings online. We've all been doing this, Zoom and everything else. Counselors who are specializing in things like depression, stress, anxiety, relationships, anger. Dwayne already said, you know, he's a fight or flight guy. He got an anger issue. We might have to send him over there. I don't know. I know we either send him to thebetterhelp.com or back to Dubai. I don't know. Listen, anything you share is confidential. It's convenient, it's professional, it's affordable, and as a listener, you get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/Alonzo. Look, you want to start living a happier life. I want you to start living a happier life. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. BetterHelp, HELP.com/Alonzo, 10% off your first month. Take care of yourself, people, physically and mentally. Thank you.
Absolutely. That's great. You know, when you think about it, like, because I think getting help is really important. Remember the Laugh Factory used to give comics five free sessions, which
right.
I think was great, great, great. And I did it, and it was really helpful. She more became like a life coach, but in a good way.
Yeah.
In a good way, yeah.
Well, another thing about that is finding out, and I tell people all the time, one of the powerful things is finding out you're not the only one.
Right.
You know, when it comes to things like mental health, stress, addiction, you know, family issues, whatever, so many of us think no one understands. No one, and then you find out, oh, I'm not the only one. There's like an exhale to it.
Right.
You know,
right, absolutely.
So, yeah, it is definitely something to take care of. All right, man, we're going to move into the who's paying attention portion.
Awesome.
And talk about this stuff. And again, this ain't a test.
right.
Before we started, Dwayne said, was there any homework? Did I not do homework? So let's talk about celebrity, right? The world, you talked about it, and the world is fascinated with celebrity. And we know in our business, the celebrity, in a lot of ways, the celebrity became more important than the funny.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great way of putting it, too.
Whether that's good or bad is up to the individual. Us old purists, we got problems. But, you know, club owners and TVs putting numbers, selling ads. Right.
But we're not haters, though.
I'm
always liked that about you. You're not a hater.
No. So this is interesting. So what the premise of this is, it says people who are obsessed with celebrities tend to score lower on measures of cognitive ability. And this was a study done, and they found a tendency for those who showed the strongest admiration for their favorite celebrity to have lower cognitive skills. And they said this is not just chance. The results support previous findings showing that excessive behavior such as celebrity worship can possibly impair cognitive functioning due to the increased focus and energy invested in this that becomes dominant in an individual's life. So I think this gets back to that thing. You've probably seen that saying where they say, like, the best minds think of ideas and then, you know, talk about ideas.
Right.
And then others talk about people.
Right.
So I think what they're saying is we've become so celebrity obsessed, people aren't even thinking. And this is, you know, where else this comes in? Influencers.
Right.
You know, and I do a joke about, listen, I can't feel when an influencer dies to get a great picture on Instagram, I'm like, well, you know, they had a fence. They put up a fence for a reason.
Does that happen? Because
they climb over the fence at the Grand Canyon.
Okay.
People were falling in the Grand Canyon like they thought there was a trampoline at
the
bottom.
I was at the Grand Canyon. And that's so funny. I didn't realize it was an influencer thing. I just thought it was people who wanted the ultimate shot. I was at the Grand. I did a festival. This is like 2 or 3 years ago. I did a festival in Arizona. On the way back, we stopped at the Grand Canyon. The comics I was with, and I couldn't enjoy it because people were too close to the edge.
Yeah,
and they were just stressing me out to the point was. And then again, my I know I shouldn't say this out loud, but my fight or flight. It's not fight or flight because they weren't bothering me. But at some point, I was so worried about them falling. That I go, I have to leave because if I stay any longer, I'm going to root for you to fall. And I don't want to be that guy who roots for you to fall. Because you're putting me in a position where you're stressing me out. And the only way I could relieve the stress is to actively root against you. You know what I mean?
See, what I always say, you know who never falls into the Grand Canyon? The mules.
Right.
Right? The mules, like they see the fence. They're like, okay, tour stops right here. Like no mule ever said, hey, I wonder if I climb over the fence and lean, can I get a picture?
And with Zoom technology and drones, I just don't know why you personally need to go to the edge. You know what I mean? But back to the celebrity thing, I like that note, but I feel like I push back on the causation of it. You know what I mean? Meaning – Does being obsessed with a celebrity lower your cognitive abilities, or do people with lower cognitive abilities become obsessed with celebrities more?
Well, according to this study, it lowers it in the sense that you put more energy in. What they're saying is you put more energy into following Kim Kardashian than reading books.
You know what, too? I can relate from a sports standpoint. Like you said, ESPN started 24-hour sports. When that started, people were like, what the hell? Like, the game is an hour. How can you talk about sports for 24 hours? And then 30 years later, they've mastered it. And I think when you first watch things, and this is what the comment section is on any of these social media websites, and this is what talk radio is, and sports talk radio in particular, you are listening or watching to hear your opinion,
right?
Because I think this thing, does anyone think like me? But then what happens is, if you turn on First Take or any of the talking head things, every day you turn it on, you like sports, that's what I was saying. And at some point, you don't have to think anymore. They'll say it for you. You know what I mean? And then what you think and what they told you to think becomes blurred, and you don't even know where you begin and they begin.
So you're saying the same thing with celebrity when you get so caught up into their world.
Yeah.
And you know, the thing is, it's such an industry, right?
But also they make sure you don't think anymore.
Right.
I'll do this for you, you know?
Well, the funny thing about that article, it comes out of People magazine.
That's funny.
Which is the magazine devoted to celebrity. They're basically saying, if you're reading this, you know, you got a problem. You talk about unintentionally funny. That's hilarious. But yeah, the article was from People magazine. So yeah, I could see what you're saying, but I think celebrity worship stops us from thinking and talking about ideas and talking about things. You're just talking about what the celebrity, and like you said, you're looking for someone who agrees with what you think, right?
Right.
So, and this is, you know, we're dealing with it right now in dealing with the coronavirus, right? When people start talking about what Aaron Rodgers, I need Aaron Rodgers' opinion when it's 3rd and 5.
Right.
I don't need Aaron Rodgers' medical opinions.
Right,
you know, now his medical opinions are fine for him.
Right, right.
But I don't need them publicly. I don't, at no point
absolutely,
am I thinking,
but
I've never had the thought, you know who would be a good president? Kanye.
But here's the problem. Here's my problem with the whole thing, both sides. But the right does this, because the right is, they're quick to say, especially if you're a young black athlete with any kind of opinion, shut up and play ball, right? Mm. Quick to say that. And there's something to that, right? Oh, you're an actor. Why do I need to hear from you? But then the right, they constantly dip into the acting pool, you know, from Ronald Reagan to Clint Eastwood to Arnold Schwarzenegger to Trump. They're constantly, Sonny Bono, they're constantly propping up actors. And it's like, wait, are we like saying, let's leave the entertainers over here and let the career politicians do it, or it's okay when you want to dip into it? You know what I mean?
Well, they don't think about the actor. They think about the image.
I think there was no bigger
example than that was Arnold. When they made Arnold, and I hate to say elected, but yeah, it happened.
California just replaces governors like you change shirts. But anyway.
But they elected Arnold thinking he was the guy in the movies, and he thought he was the guy in the movies.
Right.
And then he went to the legislature and called them girly men, and they were like, what's wrong with you? Like, we're adults. This is the California legislature. This ain't a movie. And his whole first term was like, oh, wait, this is real.
And it's work.
And it's work, and you have to, you know, and that's the thing. And that's when they talk about the Rock for president. No.
He's a smart dude, and he probably has some Rock and Schwarzenegger. They know enough about success to model it and make, you know what I mean? But that doesn't mean that model works in every realm, every arena.
Okay. All due respect to The Rock. Good for him.
Right.
Barack Obama and The Rock are two completely different people. You understand?
Absolutely.
One of them was qualified to be president. Like, you have to, you know, I'm no fan of politicians.
Mm-hmm.
But you do have to know how to operate in politics and compromise and and you have to talk to 1,000 people and understand
absolutely
these things. And when you're a star,
right?
Especially when you're a star, nobody says no to The Rock.
Right, right.
Nobody
right.
says no to him. Nobody, they may go around him and have to change something after he leaves the room.
Right, absolutely.
But when he's at the head of the table, everything is yes, yes,
absolutely,
sir, you're brilliant.
Absolutely.
You know, you're.
And most of these politicians are lawyers. They're, you know, like, they like reading policy, obviously you have a staff and they read all the laws, but you have to understand them.
You know, well, I mean, you used to.
Right.
We're going to talk about that because that's gone out the window. But
you know the other thing about celebrity? Being a comic, and I don't know, it's so pervasive being a comic to me. I love it. I do think about, should I have been a comic? You know what I mean? As much as I love it.
Really?
As much as success as I've had. Yeah, because, okay, like girls-wise, I would have been fine, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't need comedy to get girls.
Yeah.
Money-wise, I would have been fine because I was in technology. You know, I had certain jobs lined up. Mm-hmm. Even so, travel probably wouldn't have done that. Maybe not as much. You know what I mean? And so it's just a matter of what you give up and what you get. But I will say, and I don't question that just because I'm not super famous. Because even if I was super famous, I'm not sure if I would love that, right?
Yeah.
But my thing is, being a comic has just taught me how to think, and so I've taught myself how to think, and it puts you on an island in a good and bad way. So that's so when I start to question it, the good thing is, like, for instance, once you and I started our journey, and you do Star Search, you do this, you do that, you do the you learn about the reality TV, you learn about, and you're like, oh, this is all staged, and then you can't tell regular people that because it's like telling them the magic trick.
Yeah,
And so you're spoiling it for them, or they think you're a hater, you know what I mean? But once you start seeing that things are staged, it's very freeing because you don't look at anything the same way.
Well, I've never had a moment's doubt about being a comic. Like, I absolutely love it. It defines me. But one of the things about being a comic, more so than other people, is we're observers and we see through things.
Exactly.
And that kind of ruins it for you, right? Like, there's a certain sense of wonder. We're like, nah, this is how that works. And
yeah,
it's
blue pill, red pill.
Right,
you know?
And then we say it, and then everyone laughs, and we're sitting there with the other comics like, how did they not see that?
Right.
They didn't see that. That was the easy joke.
When I watch TV with my mom or with a girl or whatever, and I say the next line, they're always like, you've seen this before. Like, no, I didn't. I've never seen this.
Right,
like,
this is so simple.
You didn't know that's what he was about to say? So I think I would have always been a guy that saw things.
Yeah.
But it just, you don't enjoy those things. Like, who's dating who? And mm-hmm. like you get people like, oh, this person's dating that person. And I never worry about that. It might be real. But it might be staged, you know. And I just think civilians don't.
I always think it's staged.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm always like, yeah. Okay, but this is great. Now that's mm-hmm. a great transition to this. So Patton Oswalt, okay. New Year's Eve, Chappelle and Patton Oswalt were in the same town. Chappelle invited Patton Oswalt to come hang out at the show he was doing. They did some time on it. Blah blah blah. So now he took a picture with Dave Chappelle, and he got some pushback on the picture on Instagram because people are like, oh, Chappelle's transphobic and all of that, which isn't true. But anyway, after 34 years of friendship, okay, Patton Oswalt says, for taking the picture, I'm sorry, truly sorry that I didn't consider the hurt it would cause or the depth of that hurt. Do you apologize for taking a picture with your friend because people didn't like him or didn't like something he said, you know?
I think not, because even though he's not family, it's sort of like, you know, no one's asking anyone to, like, not go home for Thanksgiving because your uncle voted for Trump or whatever the case, right? Like, that's your family, whatever, whatever. So I think I put it in that box, and I think it's weird that, like, I think with the cancer thing is Chappelle, like, can he go get a box of cereal from the supermarket? Like, at what, like,
yeah,
what,
Dave
what,
can do.
What can he do? Like, it seems like you want something to happen to him that's befitting of a criminal, and
right.
He's not a criminal. So you can just personally choose to not support him, and that's it. You can't dictate what anyone else does. You can only say, I won't watch this guy.
Right, and that's what I've said from beginning. So Dave is just being Dave. Dave's like, look, this is me. This is my special. If you don't like it, I don't care. I love Patton too. I haven't seen Patton Oswalt in a long time, but you know, friends is the right word, acquaintances, you know, right, how right, comics right. are. We all know each other. Always been cool with him. But if you choose to take a picture with Chappelle, then you're friends with Chappelle.
Right.
You know, it's like this has come up to me with other people who have been controversial, like Joe Rogan. You know, people, how are you friends with? I've known Joe Rogan 20 years. He's the same guy with me.
Right,
so I'm
right.
cool with Joe. You know, do I agree with everything Joe says? No, but I'm not going to apologize for being friends with Joe.
And he hasn't killed kittens or you know, touched kids as far as I know. And so, yeah, it's one of these things where, I agree with you. I don't think Chappelle is transphobic, but even if he was, that's not all he is.
Right.
Right. So, because basically now that issue, I think people don't realize at some point, it's like when someone says, I know this is crazy, but if someone says, do I look okay? Do I look okay? Do I look okay? Okay. They need a little assurance.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. At some point, though, if they keep asking, it's not assurance. Now they've hijacked your life
mm-hmm.
because now it's taking too much energy to make them feel good. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
And that's not your job or whatever. So it's like the trans thing, I get it, but that's not all Chappelle is.
Right. And my thing with Patton doing this, it's like this is disingenuous. If you're friends, you're friends.
Absolutely.
You can't just, society says I'm not supposed to like this part of him, so let me apologize. Like, right. why are
and,
you doing that?
And the thing is, that's the thing. It's the job of comics. And sometimes we might miss the mark, right? And it's hard to search a person's heart. But it's our job. If you choose to take this as a task, because some guys just want to be funny. But if you choose to try to bring sense to things, then it's your job to thread that needle and make people see both sides of something. And you may not be successful at that. Doesn't mean you're a horrible person. Doesn't mean you hate either side of things. You know, I was just listening to a podcast, the True Crime Junkies mm-hmm. one. And these girls, you know, they're super woke, but they're good. They tell a hell of a story. I mean, I'm more of a Dateline guy, but I was listening to them. And the whole thing was about this trans. I think he was. I don't know if he was a. He was born man, assigned male, became a woman, but I'm not sure when it happened exactly.
Right.
But he killed his stepmother. Like his step. Like he's been stalking her. She dated his dad for like a few years in the 80s. He's been. Have been stalking her for 20 years, right? And then it led up to them killing her. Okay. My only issue with is they were so careful to make sure they use the right pronoun and not use his dead name because he's changed his name. And my thing was like, you don't have to be that careful with this murderer.
Right.
It doesn't mean you're disrespecting the other trans community. Like this guy.
Right. It's a murderer.
This guy or girl, they're a murderer. And at the time when the murder happened, I don't know if they were. So all you got to do is just, if it's before the time, anything happened before the gender was reassigned, then it's okay, I think, to call you that old name. And then anything after, but even if you get it wrong, it doesn't matter. Stop being so careful with a murderer.
Well, that's the thing. And I think the ultimate to treat them fairly is to say it's a murderer. Like, forget the gender.
Right.
Like, you're a murderer.
You're a murderer.
That's what you are. We're not worried about what gender.
Right, right.
And if you
can allow yourself to hate that guy for
right.
what he did, and doesn't mean you hate
right.
all of the trans
You don't
people.
Hate all transgender people.
Right,
you just
right.
really don't like murderers.
Right. And they were because they were like, you know, the other news outlets, they didn't treat this well. So we want to be very careful. And at some point, I don't know if my analogy makes sense, but I'll come back to it. At some point, you're so careful that I don't know if you're respecting the victim.
Right. And you've taken the attention off of the crime.
You absolutely have. And who's to say, I mean, he clearly had sort of problems with his gender from day one. So I don't think he switched to get the heat off of him, but it does have that effect, right? Of
yeah.
taking
well,
the attention off the crime.
this goes, and it, you know, comes full circle back to the celebrity thing we were talking about with Alec Baldwin, right? When Alec Baldwin killed a woman, and I'm guilty of it because I don't know her name.
Right,
I should
right.
know her name. But anyway, but that was the point. It wasn't about the victim. It was about Alec Baldwin. It was like, wait a minute, someone died today. Like, that is worse than, you know, whatever Alec Baldwin has to deal with. Like, she didn't go home to her family.
Exactly.
She went to work that morning. She never came home.
Exactly.
That's worse than anything Alec Baldwin has to deal with in the aftermath. And we lose that.
Absolutely.
You know,
Absolutely.
We lose that. Moving on, because time-wise,
yes.
I don't know how we're doing, but I got a pretty good idea. So Marjorie Taylor Greene banned from Twitter for disinformation and false information about COVID. Okay, now there's questions about that, but I'm going to call out the right. I'm going to call out the Republicans on their hypocrisy, because one of the things they're always yelling about is businesses can do whatever they want, right? If you have a bakery, you don't have to make a cake for a gay couple. If you,
right.
you know, if you're Chick-fil-A,
as long as you don't get federal funding,
right?
Yeah,
you can give your can give your money to anti-gay or whatever. Twitter's a private company, so Twitter is like, no, we don't want you on our platform because what you say is dead. Like, freedom of speech. No. Like you can't have this both ways. If you say private companies are allowed to discriminate, and Twitter's discrimination isn't, it maybe it's not the kind of discrimination they like. Like if Twitter banned all gay people, they'd be like, oh, well, that's okay.
Right. It goes back to like
Twitter is
shut up and just act.
Right.
But we like you, so you can be president. You know?
Twitter's banning or trying to ban liars. Like.
Right.
Continual life. Well, what do you think about that? Are they within their right? I will tell you that I feel Twitter is absolutely within their right. They warn you.
Yeah.
And they say, stop spreading disinformation. You keep doing it. They're like, you're off the platform.
There's a lot of things I feel about this. A lot to unpack, right? One, Twitter absolutely can ban her, right? Because it's like, you have freedom of speech. And we can curse, right?
Yeah.
You have freedom of speech, but you can't talk shit in my house. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Like, if you come to my crib and you're saying something, it doesn't matter. You might say, I like cherry pie more than apple pie. And I might be like, fuck that. Apple pie is better. Get out of my house. You have to leave.
Yeah.
If I'm not crazy, or if that's where...
Right, where your line.
Where my line is. So they absolutely have a right. The scary part about it is that... people don't go away. They just go to a different site. They go to a different platform where they're not being monitored at all. And it's just their people. And maybe that's good, right? Because they're not getting new recruits. But who knows what they're doing over there? You know what I mean?
That's true. But they're doing that anyway. But, you know, Trump is an example of this. This is where the media, to me, like, I get it, but they are their own problem. So Trump gets banned from Twitter. So now the news is going to cover every crazy thing he says. Like,
right.
How about if we ignore him? You know, but they can't because they got to get clicks and you want to sell ads.
Right,
and,
but you should have ignored him in the 90s. Like, you thought it was a joke.
Right.
And then it became not a joke. And that's my other thing is, my problem isn't with Twitter or Facebook banning people. My problem is that, and this is the movie, Don't Look Up, did a great job of touching upon this, is that we let people do whatever they want as a country. I don't know if that's freedom. I don't know if that's like, you know, laissez-faire business, letting businesses. But we let the businesses are always ahead of the regulation. You know what I mean? I know someone who works at an ER. And people are coming in with broken legs, busted up face because they're falling off these scooters. Right.
Yeah.
And as far as I know, the scooter people didn't get like it's more of a beg for forgiveness thing. They just put the scooters out there. And I could be talking out my ass, but I think the government is always trying to keep up. So you just put these scooters out there and people ride them and then they start busting their ass. And you're like, oh, we should have regulated this. You know what I mean? Like the only thing, like things that are regulated, like air travel, things that are like really dangerous, but everything else, it's like the government is always playing catch up. So yes, Twitter has a right to ban people, but when Twitter first started, they it's like they had a responsibility to monitor content. But we missed the boat on that.
Yeah.
Because, okay, your social media thing. Oh, but wait, are you guys journalists? Oh, anyone can be a journalist. And it's just the line's so blurred. And I don't think it should be like China, but it should have been monitored right. from jump dead it, in
my
opinion.
It's tough to monitor something new because you don't know what's going to happen.
That's true. You don't know what it is.
You don't know what it is. Like with the scooters, you know, it's like they're not motorcycles, right? So we're not going to put them in that category, but they are powered. So it's not like a bicycle or an old Razor scooter where it was foot powered.
Right,
you know,
right.
They're not roller skates. So what do you do? And then who's liable? You know, who's liable when something happens? The other thing, when you talked about freedom, the side that they drop is responsibility.
Yeah.
You know, you have the freedom to do it, but there's also a responsibility. And one of the things I think we've lost, and COVID has certainly shown this, is any thought of the common good.
Right.
You know, everyone's out to get theirs. And these businesses, they're out to get theirs. And the idea of the common good, people forget, like, that's the job of the government.
Absolutely.
The job of the government is the common good. And they're not out to get you if they come up with a rule that helps. Like when they said, you know, no smoking inside whatever place, it wasn't because you smoke. It was because, no, they don't want everyone getting cancer.
Right.
You choose to get cancer, you can do it, but you got to go outside and down the block and away from others, you know. With Twitter and Facebook, I don't think they realize the power of it. It is true that the leaders of the company, once they knew, like Mark Zuckerberg, like he knew before, like he could have stopped. He could have said, oh, this is not going well, this direction. And he could have said, hey, we gotta get some kind of handle
Absolutely.
On this. There has to be some kind of responsibility on this. And this is where we get into, you know, billionaires and how much is enough and this and that and the other. I don't know. I don't want to regulate how much money he makes, but there is a responsibility. Like Warren Buffett talked about it with the Walton family and Walmart. He said, you know, you guys don't want to pay taxes. He said, well, guess what? Taxes pay for roads and they drive on roads to get to Walmart. You are involved, you know. So Mark Zuckerberg, you're involved because your platform is used to spread disinformation during an election. Well, that election affects everyone. So now you do have a responsibility.
Absolutely. And the thing is, at the end of the day, Mark Zuckerberg didn't create the internet, right? He didn't even create social media.
Right.
Like he's good at it, but he didn't. There were several social media platforms prior to
I know,
to Facebook.
I had a ton of MySpace friends.
Me too.
I lost. I miss them.
I miss them, yeah.
Where's Tom?
And so we give these guys so much credit when some of it is right time, right place. And the algorithms, like Google, great business. They do great things, but they don't. Everyone's trying to figure out what their algorithm is. Do you realize that if everything in life you do, you any information you need, you Google it? And so how does a private company have that? Now, you can Bing it, right?
Yeah.
You can Yahoo it,
I don't know. I don't even think you can Bing it anymore.
Right, I don't know.
And what was the one with the butler? Remember there was a
Jeeves.
Jeeves.
That's
where's Jeeves?
Ridiculous name. Ask Jeeves. Alta Vista was the one from back in the day, but that gave you literally, it didn't filter it at all.
Right.
You know, but it's just crazy that, you know what? You could take the railroads, you could take cable, satellites, any of these things, all these things that, with all the technology, at some point, the government helped with the infrastructure.
Right.
And so that means that you don't get to just sort of like, okay, government build it, and then now it's just solely private thing. It doesn't work like that. It's got to be some hybrid.
Well, you talked about airlines. You know, there was a time when you just flew.
Right.
And then they realized, well, no, this is a bad idea.
Right.
We need to keep an eye on it. And, you know, and airlines were something that, because I was in this business in the 80s when they deregulated it, and then they found out, oh, that doesn't work. Like, we do need some regulation because you can't have these airlines, you know, People's Express who forgot to do maintenance. because it costs too much money. Right. So they were literally like doing this overseas cheap maintenance and this and that. And it was the government was like, no, we can't. You remember the top ripped off of an airplane because they didn't inspect it and it had been corroding and stuff, you know. So, yeah, this is something that we're learning as we go. And Twitter and Facebook do have a responsibility to the government. And it's not censorship. It's stopping propaganda. It's stopping obviously false propaganda.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, especially if you're a congressperson, there's kind of an assumption that you need to tell the truth. Like there's a difference, like when Marjorie Taylor Greene, unfortunately, she's a congressperson. So when she says something, that is different than the guy at the corner yelling at cars driving by.
Right, exactly. And
even though he and she have the same ideas far too often.
Well, it's crazy because it's like they have this issue with big tech, but big tech is how you guys won the White House. The manipulation of big tech, right? From the emails to the false information on Facebook and all that stuff. So it's just, and that's the thing, if there's no common good, if there's no common truth, then I don't see a way forward. You know what I mean? If there's no focus on a common good and there's no common truth, other than the government stepping in, but the government is fractured as well.
Yeah, well, we've definitely lost what you said about the common truth because, and even like say with Google and their algorithms, you're going to find what you believe.
Exactly.
And it's tough to find the other, even though I was getting all these Republican emails. And it wasn't my name. It was a different name with my email that was Republican.
Oh, right.
And I was getting, and I didn't stop it because it was like, wow, this is fascinating what the other side reads. Listen, I want to keep going. Mm-hmm. We have to wrap it up. But one thing I always ask my guests, okay, we're going into 2022. It is a dumpster fire. We're coming out of 2021, which also happened to be a dumpster fire.
right.
What's good, man? Give me some good news. Give my listeners some good news, Dwayne.
I think what's good is you can create your own, as a performing artist, you can create your own little bubble. Whether that bubble has 10 people or 10,000 people, that's good. I think the people that follow me, shout out to all of them, I have a good bunch, you know, small but mighty. I have someone who does portraits of me, and they're really good at it, and those are kind of cool.
It's nice. It's refreshing when someone good pops up.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And stand-up is back live more and more. And I think I think that's good. And I think COVID is still out here in various forms, but it is weakening, I think. So I think that's good.
All right. That is great. Tell everyone where to follow you, where to find you online.
Yes, follow me, DwaynePerkins.com. I'm Dwayne Perkins on Instagram, DWAYNE. That's how I spell it, DW. There's nothing in between those two letters. my books are on Amazon. My specials are on Drybar and Amazon.
We didn't even have a chance, I'm sorry, to get into your book.
No worries.
That is your blogs and your musings over the year.
Yeah, that's Hot Chocolate for the Mind. But I also have this post-apocalyptic love story I wrote with my friend Koji Sakai called Zombie Run. It's a love story about two human beings who live in a zombie world and they somehow find each other.
That is great. And a Netflix special.
Yeah, which is on Amazon now. I got in at the end, like right when Netflix was still acquiring things, they acquired my special. Shout out to them for doing that. But now, so they leased it for 2 years. Now it's on, then it was on Stars. They leased it. Now it's on Amazon.
On Amazon Prime.
Yes, yes.
Cool. Yeah, mine is there also. Okay. Dwayne Perkins, yo, thank you, man. It is so great to see you. One of the unfortunate things about careers growing is you don't see your friends anymore.
Exactly.
Because we each find, you know, our own niche and what we're doing and this and that. So I'm glad I caught you stateside.
You too, man. You too.
if Black Ice goes big, I'm looking for a little part, anything I can do, I'll be absolutely glad to help you. Everyone, listen, look for Black Ice. Look for Dwayne Perkins. He is funny. He's a thinking man. And his point of view is your point of view is unique in comedy, and I do like that. And but one of the reasons I say that is because you're a nice guy. Right. Like the cynicism and the anger side of comedy hasn't poisoned you
right.
amazingly. So everyone, check that out. Take a break from this dumpster fire we're living in. Check out Dwayne and laugh at something good. Thank you, brother.
Thank you, man.